May 3rd, 1999, our third session with Dr. Al Bloomstein. We are sitting in his living room, and we would like to begin today talking about when you were leaving from Washington, D.C., when you decided to make a bit of a career change.
In the midst of my time in Washington, in 1965, I was invited by the President's Crime Commission to take on a position as director of a task force on science and technology. Prior to that, all my work had been involved in military matters and related to defense issues. And when they first came to me, I was intrigued by it, but was really in the midst of some other analyses, and so sent them to a few other people. And at that point, I was in the midst of those other analyses, and they ended up coming back about 3 months later, at which point I was finished with those things. And this represented a major career change. The commission had its task forces on police, courts, and corrections, and they decided that since science and technology was sending a man to the moon, they might as well have a task force on science and technology to solve the crime problem in the nation. That was an intriguing period. In a technological sense, it was a move from really modern technology back to a quill pen era. There was very little that was advanced technology going on in the criminal justice system. They were just starting to get to use computers in interesting ways. And so my task was assembling a team, pulled together a team of about 10 people from around the country to really take on a whole set of issues. We looked at questions of interaction across the criminal justice system from we were systems types, and so we were the first ones really who started talking about the criminal justice system as an integrated set of activities. We did analyses, simulation of cases moving through the courts. We looked at improved radio use for police, radios in the cars, portable radios. We looked at computers for identification, for retrieval of automobiles and the like. So it was a really fascinating adventure. And I must say I got fascinated by it, partly because it was totally unclassified, and it was work I could talk to people about. And it was really bringing the skills to deal with significant societal problems. And
this was all under the jurisdiction of whom?
The Institute for Defense Analyses.
Uh-huh.
The commission. I decided that rather than become a government employee and working for the commission, I and the task force would be better served if I could stay at IDA,
which was
the Institute for Defense Analyses. Continue to gain the support of the organization, the support services. And so we were a special task force, but in order to do that, it required an agreement by both Nicholas Katzenbach, who was the Attorney General and the Chairman of the Commission, and Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense, because IDA would not do that outside the Defense Department unless the Secretary of Defense agreed to it. So it took their agreement for this task force to be established. We became, It was one of those times in life when you can really play emperor's clothes. We weren't expected to know anything about the criminal justice system, so we could ask all kinds of naive questions, such as, how do you know that, when we were told what the appropriate facts were, and in many cases the facts just didn't stand up. So we started analyzing recidivism data. We made an estimate in our task force. We made an estimate of the chance that someone was going to be arrested sometime in his life, that a male in the United States would be arrested. Our estimate was 50%, which was astonishingly high to everybody. We thought it was more like 5%. We figured we must have slipped a decimal point. So that was part of the exciting new information that started to show up, and that really has fueled an awful lot of research about crime and criminal justice. Following the work of the commission.
How did you get up that high to 50%?
Well, there's lots of stuff people get arrested for, particularly as juveniles, people end up getting arrested for. But the way you get the estimate is find out how many first arrests there are. And it turned out that, I think most people felt arrestees or criminals were a tiny portion of the population. It really changes your thinking about offending when you learn that fully half the population has done it. Now, it's not all serious, and in a later study, I redid some of those estimates. Turns out that about 15% of whites and about 50% of blacks, or a total of about 25%, get arrested for something. Get arrested for something relatively serious, what are known as the index crimes, that go down to larceny, which is shoplifting, and from there on up.
What year was this that you...
Well, the initial study was 65, and we finished our report in 1967.
Mm-hmm. Following... The figures that you used were projected from then?
Well, based on rates of arrest then, and projected into a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Following the work of the commission, we had one of the task force reports, Task Force Report on Science and Technology, one of the chapters in the volume, and we had recommended a major research program. The Justice Department, we noted, was the last cabinet department with no research program. And it just was not part of the culture of the lawyer world to have a significant amount of empirical research. They did a lot of research in case law. Following the work, I was fascinated by civil issues, and so got Ida to set up an Office of Urban Research, and I ended up chairing that office. Then remember having a long discussion with Maxwell Taylor, who was the president of IDA, encouraging him to do more in the way of civil research. RAND at the time was starting to do that sort of work. They set up an office in New York, and RAND was a similar kind of organization. That they did work primarily for the Air Force at the time, but they spread out from there. Maxwell Taylor decided that he really didn't want the organization to go beyond defense. And so at that point, I started thinking about university jobs, and in fact had a number of offers, because universities were now starting to become much more involved in problems. Harvard had set up the Kennedy School. I was thinking of taking a job chairing the Department of Industrial Engineering at Wayne State, and even had an intriguing offer from the University of Buffalo, or what was then SUNY Buffalo, a department I had applied to for a master's degree some 10, 15 years earlier that told me I had lots of undergraduate courses to take before they would accept me as a candidate for a master's degree. I had an offer from them to become chair of their Department of Industrial Engineering. And right at that time, Carnegie Mellon, which had just become Carnegie Mellon just a few years earlier, had decided they wanted to set up a School of Urban and Public Affairs. This was founded by a grant from Richard King Mellon and the Mellon Foundation. And as I hear the story, it's an intriguing one, Mellon and his colleagues had been the ones who cleaned up the environment in Pittsburgh, between Mellon and David Lawrence, who was the mayor, David Lawrence running the politics, Mellon running the money and the corporate world, cleaned up downtown Pittsburgh.
Is that R.K.?
Richard King Mellon, right. And concluded that the problems starting to emerge in the 60s were not so much one of land use or environment, which he could manage, but were starting to be societal problems. We were having the civil rights strife in the South, and we had the riots following the Martin Luther King assassination. And so Mellon decided that what he needed to deal with these issues was an academic institution that would start to pay attention to some of these societal problems. I had a call from Bill Cooper, who really was a major researcher in operations research, who I knew of extremely well. He was just recently appointed dean of the first dean of the school, and he said he wanted to meet me in Washington, and so we went up. I had no idea what it was about, so we arranged to go to some bar, some jazz joint down in Georgetown, and he and a colleague of his, Abe Charnes, ended up interviewing me about a possible position on the faculty here. And that worked out very well. I was intrigued by the offer. I was intrigued by the plans to build a brand new school to deal with some of these issues. And so that ended up working out. I was ready to leave Washington. The Defense Department under even under Lyndon Johnson and especially under Richard Nixon were nowhere as attractive as they were under Robert McNamara. And so Washington was becoming less attractive generally. And so that made for a move up to Carnegie Mellon. This was in 1969. I came up in March, commuted between Washington so we could let our kids finish school, and started as a first-time full-time as a full-time faculty member. I never had to go through the tenure fiasco. I came up as a tenured professor. And I think that was largely based on some of the creative work that we had done as part of the Task Force on Science and Technology.
I'd like to go into a little more detail. You observed that Mellon's understanding or initiative, because of funding and personal interest, was a key, important ingredient anyway, of this
rejuvenation of Pittsburgh.
Not merely rejuvenation of Pittsburgh. I'm just talking, what I'm really reaching for is the role of multi-centered initiative in American society in starting things. Not everything started in government planning or need.
Right.
And could you comment on that?
Well,
in that case and in others, you know, the significance of that issue.
Well, Richard King Mellon clearly loved Pittsburgh and clearly saw Pittsburgh was having its troubles, as were other cities in the country, and Pittsburgh probably reasonably benign compared to many other places that were really getting into serious trouble. And he knew he could solve, he had solved the land use problem. totally transformed downtown Pittsburgh from an ugly, smoke-belching industrial activity into really a rather attractive place, for the time at least. He was key in getting rid of the bituminous coal and its dominance as the heating fuel for the region. But society was having all kinds of problems associated with racial tension and integration. And he knew that the politics couldn't deal with it and the money couldn't deal with it. And so it was a sense that he needed an intellectual activity that would be centered at a major institution.